Imagine walking into a high-stakes poker game. The air in the room is thick, it's completely dead silent, and everyone at the table is just sweating through their suits.
Sounds intense.
Right, and there are billions of dollars piled up in the center. But just as the dealer is about to turn over the river card, every single player suddenly stands up and decides to rewrite the rules of the game mid-hand.
Wait, just completely change the rules.
Exactly. And they aren't doing it to cheat. They are doing it because if they don't change the rules right now, they are all going out of business.
Wow. I mean, it sounds like a complete structural collapse, right? A scenario where the whole established order just stops functioning.
That is exactly the vibe, and it is a perfect way to welcome you, our favorite learner listening right now, to another deep dive. Because that panicked poker game, that is the global video game industry in April of 2026.
Yeah, it's absolute madness right now.
We are witnessing a real-time masterclass in fractured economics, rapidly evolving hardware, and survival strategies that would have sounded like pure fiction even 2 years ago.
We are looking at a sector that generates more revenue globally than movies and music combined. Yet its foundational business models, the very things that built the industry, are currently fracturing under just immense, unsustainable pressure.
Right. And to figure out how we got here, we are unpacking a really comprehensive breaking report from Tech in Morning. It's dated April 2, 2026.
A very recent drop.
Yeah. And this document synthesizes six industry-shaking news stories that all dropped within a single 24-hour window.
Which, by the way, is a staggering concentration of corporate movement for one day.
It is wild. But our mission today isn't just to read you a list of gaming updates. We are going to connect the dots.
Right, look at the underlying trends.
Exactly. We're going to show you how multi-billion-dollar tech giants are ripping up their old playbooks in response to skyrocketing development costs and unprecedented AI disruptions. We're looking at fortresses being fortified, rival fortresses being willingly dismantled, and honestly, the financial death of the mega-budget blockbuster.
To understand the sheer scale of this pivot, we really need to look at how these different titans are trying to solve the exact same problem, which is survival. Historically, the most reliable path to winning this market was building a walled garden.
Right.
You create exclusive, must-have software, and you lock it behind highly premium proprietary hardware.
And nobody executes that classic strategy quite like Sony.
Oh, definitely.
So the Tech in Morning report kicks off with a crucial software lifeline for them. Housemarque, the studio behind Returnal, has officially gone gold on their highly anticipated PlayStation 5 exclusive, Saros, launching April 30.
Oh, that's huge. And for anyone outside the development bubble, gold basically means the primary coding and asset creation are fundamentally finished.
The game is locked in.
Yeah, the master version of the game is locked, ready to be printed onto physical media and uploaded to the PlayStation Network servers for distribution.
Which is a massive sigh of relief for Sony, considering their early 2026 lineup has been, well, uncomfortably quiet.
Very quiet, yeah.
But Saros didn't come easy. The developers essentially had to perform open-heart surgery on their internal engine code. They battled the console's memory limits for months to pull off this new real-time particle destruction system. And I have to admit, I hear a phrase like particle destruction, and it just sounds like marketing jargon.
Sure.
What is actually happening inside the machine to make that so difficult?
Well, it comes down to the physics calculations. In older games, when you blew up a wall, the game would just swap the solid wall model for a pre-animated broken wall model.
Like a magic trick.
Exactly, it was an illusion.
Yeah.
Real-time particle destruction means the system is calculating the unique trajectory, velocity, and physical collision of thousands of individual splinters and debris fragments simultaneously.
Oh.
Yeah, and it's all based on exactly where an impact occurred. Tracking all those unique physical objects requires immense memory bandwidth. It literally chokes the silicon.
It pushes the hardware so hard that the Tech in report includes a literal
A
warning.
thermal warning, right?
Yeah. Because Saros puts such severe thermal stress on the PS5's graphical processing unit, they are advising players to keep their consoles in well-ventilated, highly cooled environments. And interestingly, they point this advice specifically toward gamers utilizing legal account capacities to share digital games.
Which is a fascinating detail because it highlights the fractured global economics of gaming right now.
How so?
Well, take markets like Iran, for example. The cost of physical game discs has soared to astronomical levels there due to currency inflation and supply chain shocks.
Right, making it basically unaffordable for a single person.
Exactly. So consumers adapt by pooling their money and using those legal account sharing features. But that means a single console might be running demanding software like Soros for 12 to 15 hours a day.
Because different users are logging in back to back.
Right, creating sustained thermal loads that the hardware wasn't necessarily designed to handle.
That makes total sense. And Sony clearly recognizes that software is pushing their current boxes to the breaking point, so they are matching those demands with new hardware. In total secrecy, they just revealed Project Playmo.
The new controller.
Yeah, a Generation 2 wireless controller launching alongside the upcoming PS5 Pro. Okay, let's unpack this, because the tech inside Project Playmo is wild.
It really is. The specifications leak here read less like a traditional gamepad and more like industrial robotics.
It features an AI-controlled dual haptic feedback system using what they call magnetic suspensions. The claim is it can perfectly simulate the physical resistance of different terrains, asphalt, mud, snow, right into the triggers and sticks. But how do magnets make something feel like mud?
So instead of a traditional rumble motor just vibrating, electromagnetic fields dynamically change the physical tension of the mechanisms inside.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, if your character walks into deep mud, the AI increases the magnetic resistance on your thumbstick. It physically fights back against your thumb, making it feel heavy and sluggish to push, simulating the actual viscosity of the mud.
That is brilliant engineering. And to power all that resistance, it packs a 2,400 million ampere hour graphene battery, promising 20 hours of heavy vibration gameplay. Why the shift to graphene?
Well, traditional lithium-ion batteries tend to overheat when discharging energy rapidly to power those intense magnetic motors.
Right, like a smartphone getting hot.
Exactly. Graphene is essentially a single layer of carbon atoms arranged in a hexagonal lattice. It conducts electricity and dissipates heat far more efficiently than lithium.
Which solves the heat problem.
Right. It allows the controller to dump huge amounts of power into those haptics without degrading the battery's lifespan or melting the plastic casing.
I love that level of detail. But here's the thing that stopped me in my tracks. The controller uses all effect sensors for the thumbsticks. The report says this permanently fixes the stick drift issue that has ruined controllers for a decade, increasing their lifespan 20-fold.
Yeah, stick drift is the bane of every gamer's existence.
Right, and as I understand it, traditional sticks use physical components that literally scrape against each other, like an eraser on paper wearing down over time. Hall Effect uses magnets to measure voltage changes, meaning no parts physically touch. It's the equivalent of a light bulb that never burns out.
Exactly.
But I have to push back on Sony here. If this frictionless magnet-based technology exists, why did it take a premium Generation 2 release for a multi-billion dollar company to finally give us joysticks that don't break after 6 months of use? That feels incredibly anti-consumer.
What's fascinating here is that your frustration points directly to the core of Sony's overarching strategy. Why hold it back? Because Sony is doubling down on premium, highly specialized hardware as their primary economic moat.
So it's intentional.
Completely. As the components to build consoles get more expensive globally, Sony wants to create a physical ecosystem so tactile, so advanced, and so durable that you feel permanently anchored to it. They want the physical object in your hands to be the reason you refuse to play anywhere else.
I see.
If they're going to give you the unbreakable light bulb, they're going to make sure it is installed in their most expensive, high-margin chandelier.
So they are building the walls of their garden even taller and just paving them in marble to justify the entry price?
Precisely. They are betting that the sheer sensory superiority of playing on a PlayStation will blind you to the premium cost.
Well, if Sony's answer to this economic pressure is to build a more expensive fortress, their biggest historical rival is taking the exact opposite approach. Microsoft has apparently looked at the fortress model and decided it is a financial death trap.
The divergence in corporate philosophy between the two right now is stark. Yeah. Very stark.
Here's where it gets really interesting. Microsoft has officially announced their Xbox Games Showcase for Sunday, June 7, 2026. But according to the Tekken Report, Xbox CEO Phil Spencer is navigating a historic dilemma.
Historic might be an understatement.
Right. All signs point to Xbox completely transitioning away from being a first-party hardware titan and transforming into a pure third-party software publisher. Rumors are practically confirmed that legacy Xbox exclusives, we're talking the crown jewels like Gears of War and the upcoming Indiana Jones game, will be officially released on the PlayStation 5.
That is a seismic shift for the medium. I mean, for 25 years, the entire architecture of the console war was built strictly on exclusivity. The only reason to buy an Xbox was to play Xbox games.
I am struggling to wrap my head around the branding of this. Isn't this like Pepsi suddenly deciding to sell their soda exclusively in Coca-Cola bottles?
That's a great way to put it.
It feels like waving a white flag.
Yeah.
Does this mean the hardware war is officially over?
If we connect this to the bigger picture, the broader financial picture, it isn't a white flag at all. It is a desperate rescue operation based on modern business realities. Consider the acquisition spree Microsoft has been on over the last several years.
They bought up half the industry.
They did. They absorbed tens of billions of dollars in costs, acquiring massive publishers like Bethesda and Activision Blizzard. But to recoup those astronomical investments in a strained global economy, they have to maximize their software sales.
And Xbox alone isn't enough to do that.
Not even close. PlayStation currently has an installed user base of well over 100 million players. Xbox cannot afford to lock their games away from 100 million potential customers just to protect the pride of their plastic box.
Right, the math just doesn't work.
Exactly. Exclusivity is a luxury of a bygone era. They need raw software revenue, regardless of whose machine is running it.
It will be surreal to boot up a PlayStation and see the Gears of War logo. But the math is undeniable. Microsoft needs revenue because game development in 2026 has become a terrifying studio-killing gamble.
The financial risk profile for creating a top-tier video game has grown completely disproportionate to the potential rewards.
The report details a genuinely tragic leak regarding the studio Eidos Montreal. Following a wave of severe layoffs, it came to light that they were deep into development on Project P11, which was an impossibly ambitious open-world Lord of the Rings game.
An open-world Tolkien game is essentially the holy grail for fantasy consumers. The addressable audience for that is practically limitless.
The vision was staggering. It carried a $100 million budget and was engineered to overshadow Hogwarts Legacy. The pitch was that players could traverse the entirety of Middle-earth with zero loading screens.
That's incredibly ambitious.
You could walk from the Shire all the way to Mordor seamlessly. How do you even achieve zero loading screens on a map that large?
Well, it requires phenomenally complex predictive asset streaming. The game engine has to guess which direction you are walking, load the high-resolution textures of the trees and mountains miles ahead of you into the active memory.
Just based on the direction you're facing?
Exactly. And simultaneously dump the data of the town you just left, all in milliseconds. Developing and debugging that kind of seamless data pipeline requires armies of engineers, which translates directly into bloated budgets.
And we will never get to play it. The parent company of Eidos Montreal, the Embracer Group, is currently buckling under $2 billion in debt. They analyzed the current market, outright canceled Project P11, and fired the team.
It's devastating for the developers.
The report quotes an IGN senior analyst stating that these $100 million production costs are quite literally bankrupting studios. And to make matters worse, AI creations specifically citing the Sora project cancellation crisis are destroying the traditional rules of survival.
That AI component is the true disruptive force here. Traditional development relies on hundreds of human artists painstakingly handcrafting every rock, tree, and building over 5 years. When you introduce generative AI models like Sora, which can output complex environmental assets and underlying code in a fraction of the time and cost, a $100 million human pipeline suddenly looks dangerously inefficient to a board of directors.
So what does this all mean for the art form? I look at modern AAA game development right now, and it looks like building an opulent luxury cruise ship. It costs a fortune, it takes half a decade to construct, and if that ship doesn't sell out every single ticket on its maiden voyage, the entire company sinks to the bottom of the ocean. There is zero margin for error.
This raises an important question regarding sustainability. Have we finally hit the ceiling of traditional game development? The industry's guiding philosophy has always been bigger is better.
More polygons, bigger maps.
Exactly. More polygons, vaster maps, hundreds of hours of content. The Eidos leak proves that philosophy is defunct. The financial exposure is so severe that even globally beloved intellectual properties like J.R.R. Tolkien's universe are no longer safe bets.
A known brand used to be an insurance policy against a flop.
Today, it isn't enough to save you.
If you are a studio executive looking at that cruise ship analogy, you have to be sweating. If building a standalone blockbuster game is a direct path to insolvency, how do you guarantee a return on your intellectual property?
You stop selling a standalone game. You start selling an inescapable lifestyle.
You turn your characters into a multimedia brand. And according to the Tekken Report, that is exactly Nintendo's master plan for navigating 2026.
Nintendo has always marched to the beat of its own drum, avoiding the hardware arms race with Sony and Microsoft. But this multimedia pivot operates on an entirely different scale.
Following the Studio Illumination's $1 billion box office triumph with the first Super Mario movie, CEO Chris Meledandri confirmed that a Super Mario Galaxy film is actively in production. And the crucial detail here is that Shigeru Miyamoto, the legendary creator of Mario, is personally supervising the space sequences for the film.
His involvement ensures the specific visual language and gravitational physics of the games translate authentically to the cinematic format, keeping the core audience engaged. But, you know, this is about much more than a single sequel.
The cinematic analysis in the report suggests Nintendo is constructing an NCU, a Nintendo Cinematic Universe. The rumors point to all these standalone character films culminating in a colossal Super Smash Bros. Crossover movie event.
Just like the Avengers.
Exactly. The strategy is to engineer an infinite loop. Ticket sales drive console sales, which in turn drive merchandise sales, which drive theme park attendance.
It is the Walt Disney playbook, modernized and perfected for interactive media.
But they are taking integration a step further than just theaters. Miyamoto is reportedly on a mission to put Pikmin, those little plant-like alien creatures, on literally every Nintendo product.
Right, the data mining leak.
Yeah, data miners recently found codecs buried in a Switch update, proving that Pikmin will become highly interactive visual identities baked directly into the rumored Switch 2 operating system. It sounds similar to the old Mii avatars, but omnipresent.
Integrating characters at the operating system level is a stroke of ambient branding genius. By having interactive Pikmin running around the system menus, they create persistent brand awareness. Every time a user powers on the device, before they even launch a piece of software, they are actively engaging with Nintendo's intellectual property.
The prospect of dozens of little Pikmin marching across my home screen while I'm trying to find my settings menu sounds kind of chaotic. But I have to ask, does this approach run the risk of IP fatigue? When a brand is shoved into literally every corner of your life in the theater, on your OS menu, at the theme park, in the toy aisle, does it lose its novelty?
Fatigue is a valid psychological concern, sure. But from a purely economic survival standpoint, this strategy effectively insulates Nintendo from the catastrophic gaming crash we discussed with the canceled Lord of the Rings project.
Because they have other revenue streams.
Right. Nintendo isn't just relying on software units sold anymore. They are monetizing an entire interconnected ecosystem. If a specific game underperforms, the movie ticket revenues or the plush toy sales absorb the financial blow. They aren't building a vulnerable luxury cruise ship. They are building the entire ocean.
Building the ocean, that is a brilliant way to frame it. And it perfectly synthesizes the ultimate verdict of this Tekken report. The 2026 gaming industry is defined by brilliant, chaotic madness.
Absolutely.
You have Sony doubling down on ultra-premium walled garden hardware like the magnetic Playmo controller to lock players in. You have Microsoft doing the exact opposite, tearing down their walls and abandoning exclusivity to chase software revenue on rival platforms.
Right.
You have $100 million mega projects collapsing under their own weight. And you have Nintendo building a Hollywood media empire to escape the volatility of game development altogether.
Four distinctly different corporate philosophies attempting to navigate the exact same economic storm.
So what does all this corporate maneuvering mean for you, the learner, and the consumer listening right now? The Source Report actually concludes with a note on this.
Yeah, it's very practical advice.
In this volatile landscape of sudden price shocks, and the Tekken Report specifically highlights the severe April 2nd price increases currently hitting digital markets like Tehran, the smartest thing you can do is be ruthlessly strategic with your wallet.
Absolutely.
Hardware is getting more specialized and expensive, games are changing platforms, and development is precarious. You have to vote with your money carefully.
The market will ultimately be decided by where consumers believe they are extracting the most value, whether that means investing in a durable, unbreakable controller, paying for a multi-platform software subscription, or simply buying a movie ticket.
We want to leave you with one final provocative thought to mull over as you navigate this new landscape.
We have established today that creating traditional, standalone, blockbuster video games is becoming financially toxic. We have seen tech giants forced to rely on their fiercest rivals or pivot to Hollywood crossovers just to stay afloat. So you have to wonder, will the next decade of entertainment be defined not by the video games we actively play, but by the multimedia franchises we passively consume?
That is the multi-billion dollar question. Because if that high-stakes poker game we talked about at the start keeps changing its rules eventually, you have to look around the table and ask if we're even playing poker anymore. Thanks for taking this deep dive with us. We will catch you on the next one.